Choir directors are creative, resourceful, dedicated, and sometimes completely out of ideas. Not to worry, the Choir Ninja Podcast is here with solutions you never saw coming. Get ready for some training, wisdom, and inspiration from the masters. Let Ryan Guth guide your journey to becoming a choir ninja.
Hey there, Choir Nation. This is Ryan Guth with the Choir Ninja Podcast. And today I am delighted to have with me Luke McKendifer and Sharon Farber. They are two individually unique artists that are joining me today, but they happen to be collaborating and on a very exciting project here in just a few days. And I wanted to get them on before this premiere work and have them talk to you a little bit about their relationship, how they work together through a community children's chorus, a very large scale community children's chorus, and also as an individual composer as well. So before we get into that, I want to say thank you to our sponsors. The first is MyMusicFolders.com. MyMusicFolders is the place to go for all things music folders. John and Robin Rose out of Montana are the coolest people in the world and are innovators in the world of music folders. They do things with folders that I didn't think folders could do. So if you go to MyMusicFolders.com, type in the promo code NINJA, you will get their maximum bulk discount. Even if you order one or five or 10, you will get the price of if you order over 100. So go to mymusicfolders.com, mention the promo code NINJA or type it in at checkout and you'll receive that promotion. Secondly, we have another longtime sponsor, which is sightreadingfactory.com. Sightreadingfactory.com is pretty much the coolest software you will use with your choir to generate sight singing examples based on specifications that you choose. So you could say, I want an SSA 8-measure composition in the key of F in 3/4 time with a difficulty level of 5 out of 6, and then hit a generate button, and there is a sexy little algorithm that makes a sight singing example just for you based on those specifications. And if you want another one, you just hit generate again and it takes a split second and makes you another one. And they're all completely unique. So if you're not using it, do it because it's really, really great. And your kids are missing out if you don't. Okay. It is about $35 for an entire year. So you could literally panhandle on the streets of Albuquerque and make up the money you need to buy that software. So go ahead to sightreadingfactory.com, type in the promo code NINJA, and you will get 10 free student accounts with your teacher account. So you can try that feature out as well. So, My Music Folders, Sight Reading Factory, promo code NINJA. All right, Luke and Sharon, thank you for being with me on the Choir Ninja Podcast.
Thank you, Ryan.
I did a lot of talking there, so I'm excited for you guys. So, Luke, let me put you on hold for a second, and Sharon, ladies first, I would like to just have you introduce yourself. Just give us the brief Reader's Digest biography of Sharon Farber.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me on the show. And I'm a composer. I write music for films, for TV, for orchestras, for choirs. I'm 4 times Emmy nominated. And I love working on all kinds of different projects. But choral music is something that I really enjoy doing because the human voice is especially communicative method of writing. And as I said, I also write music for films. So I love everything. And I just came back from a tour in the Pacific Northwest with my cello concerto, which is for cello, orchestra, and narrator. Which I wrote for a wonderful man, a Holocaust survivor that saved a lot of people during the Holocaust. And I became very, very attached to him. He passed away in May, but his legacy will continue through the music. So I already have, it looks like, another performances in the summer too. And then a tour, a European tour in 2019. So I'm very excited about that. I'm very excited about my upcoming projects, film projects, and I'm very, very excited about collaborating with the National Children's Chorus and with Luke here, who's I just saw the rehearsal yesterday of my piece, and it's just unbelievable what he gets out of these kids. It's totally professional. It's just unbelievable the level that Luke is getting out of these kids. So that's me in a nutshell.
Sharon, what is
Sharon?
I just did it. You know what? I said I wasn't going to do it. Sharon, sorry. I am so sorry. Oh, I knew it was going to happen at some point. I'm looking down at my like info sheet and I just saw Sharon and I called just Sharon who passes out cookies on the Southwest Airlines flight. Sorry about that.
Passing out cookies is not my strongest suit.
No. You're passing out feelings. That's what you're doing. Yes. Okay. So, Luke, let's go to you and give us your mini bio.
Well, I'm very honored and excited to be working with Sharon as well. We're very interested at the National Children's Chorus in promoting and commissioning new works. We started this organization as the National Children's Chorus in 2009. I was appointed artistic director of the Paulist Choristers in 2004. And after graduating from UCLA with Donald Nguyen. I studied a little bit with I studied for about 3 years with Paul Solomonovich and orchestral conducting as well from Kenneth Kiesler, University of Michigan. And starting with the Paulist Choristers in 2004, I hadn't really been trained to work with children at that point, but just was so inspired with what they could do and how they would really rise to the level of professionals when trained. In 2009, along with Christina Demiani, our executive director, we decided to create something that was on a national scale. And so I moved to New York and we founded the National Children's Chorus, which is, we transformed the Paulist Choristers into the National Children's Chorus. We started our educational programs out there. And we started with only 16 families in Los Angeles. And today we are now at almost 700 families in Los Angeles, New York, and Washington, D.C., which are the three cities we exist in as of this date. And performances at Lincoln Center, Carnegie Hall. We just performed with the Los Angeles Master Chorale and Eric Whitaker at Walt Disney Concert Hall. We've done premieres of Tan Dunn, Morten Lauritsen, and also have collaborated with many great conductors, including Gustavo Dudamel, Grant Gershon, and a lot of great and exciting projects on the horizon as well. But part of what our mission is in expanding the art form. We feel a lot of times that children's chorus repertoire really lends itself to music that is not necessarily that serious. And quite often children are treated as the adjunct entity to larger adult works. And we firmly believe that children are not artists of tomorrow, but rather they're artists of today. We feel that they are powerful now, both artistically and in terms of what they can offer the world. And so our mission at the NCC is to find the world's greatest composers, to seek them out and to have them write new and great works for children's chorus, expanding the repertoire and redefining what's possible for children, young children to perform is really central to what we do. So that leads us up until today.
Wonderful. Well, as we are artists of today, I'm thank you for bringing us to the present. So the question I have is, just the first thing that just popped into my mind is, do you have plans or do you already have a choral series that would allow people who share your philosophy to be able to perform the music that you've commissioned?
We don't have a choral series yet, but it is on the agenda to possibly create one. A lot of the composers we work with, though, already have publishers that they regularly work with, such as Boosey and Hawks. And right now we also have another piece commissioned by Thomas Hewitt Jones, who does a lot of the writing for Vocis 8. He's writing a brand new arrangement for us, not just an arrangement, he's rescoring the text from Emma Lazarus, the new Colossus, the inscription on the Statue of Liberty, give me, you're tired, you're poor. So I know a lot of the composers we work with, they a lot of times, at least as of now, have publishers they are already working with. So we at this time have not started our own series, but we have considered the idea, and it's something we will probably move to in the near future.
Are your works that you've commissioned, are they out there on other people's series then? They're in other publishers, or can we find these works, or are these things that are held by the composer?
Some of them are.
Okay.
There will be many more, but there are some that have been published with our name on it.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of people that would probably really share in your philosophy, and that sort of the children are kind of underestimated by choral composers and potentially the choral community. And we all know in my own experience as a middle school director, I mean, I never thought that, you know, seventh and eighth graders could end up doing what they do when I first got into teaching. I thought I was going to go to high school and I would have this amazing high school program and we'd sing all the same stuff we sang in college. And, you know, that was me at 22 years old. But come to find out, you have these middle school kids that can do amazing things and move people at the same time, and create change and all that sort of stuff. So it's, I know that a lot of people, especially in Choir Nation, will share your philosophy, Luke. So, you know, if there's any way, that we can find some of the things that you've done in the past, I'm sure there are people that would be interested in learning more about that.
Sure. Perhaps after the interview, I can provide you with the list and you can post it perhaps on the Choir Nation Facebook page. We can a list of the commissions that we've done in the past.
Great. That would be wonderful. That would be wonderful. Sharon, how did you get invited to do this project, and what is the project? Let's start with that.
The project is I've been asked to by the NCC to compose a piece in Hebrew.
Okay.
So you know, I was kind of looking because I had two other pieces that that are published by Lorenzo. That are also in Hebrew, but it was by, I love the text and I composed the text without thinking, and then you get into all kinds of rights of the text and things like that. So I wanted to avoid that with the NCC. So I wanted that process to be easy. So I looked for public domain text, and they asked that it's going to be connected to the theme of unity and children and kind of a more holiday spirits of unity. And I couldn't find anything that really kind of talked to me. So I decided to write it myself, the text. And I wrote it, and happily, it was accepted with much enthusiasm.
Could you share? Could you share a bit of that text with us?
Yes. If you hold on for, well, hold on. Let me see if I remember it by heart.
Okay.
It's called "Children of Light." In Hebrew, it's called "Yaldei Haor," Haor, children of light, and it goes like that. Hold on. Do I remember it? I had a dream. I have to look at the text.
I can read. Would you like me to? I can
go
read
for it.
Yes,
Luke,
why don't you read it? Because sure. I'm locking my own text right now.
It's absolutely beautiful, the text. It says, "I had a dream, a gold chain made of singing children, children of peace and grace. Their song like a ray of light, a poignant glow that ascends and ascends. Unlocks this aching, weary heart of the world, penetrates, touches its soul, and heals and embraces one world together."
Well, that is beautiful. That is beautiful. So you're a composer and a poet. We didn't even know it. There you go.
Apparently, I didn't know it, but apparently I...
That's great. That's great. Okay, so this piece, is scored for is this all of the children's choruses in LA as part of your your concert?
No, in each of our cities, in New York and in Los Angeles, we have 8 different levels, and in 2 different divisions, senior division and junior division. The juniors have 4 levels. Senior division has 3 different ensembles. So the premier ensemble is the highest level treble chorus. Above that, we have our college prep SATB group. But this is for the treble group, okay, the most advanced. And this is scored, generally speaking, SSA a cappella. And there are times when it splits into 4 and 5 parts. But for the most part, it's in 3.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm sorry. Just really quick, I noticed that a lot of children's choruses, their premier group is the treble group, and before we get to high school, that group is not like the oldest group is not the premier group. Why? Can you explain to shed some light onto why that is? Because I noticed that's with LA Children's Chorus as well, and I know that with Princeton Girl Choir over here on the East Coast and all these wonderful choirs, but their treble group is not the oldest, is not the oldest, but is the premier group.
Well, the name of the group is called the Premier Ensemble. I wouldn't say that they're the most advanced. The most advanced is the college prep group. They're college SATB and they're very good. I mean, they sang Morten Lauritsen's Lux Aeterna beautifully with Mr. Lauritsen in our audience last year, and they sing a lot of repertoire in 4 to 8 parts. But the premier ensemble, the treble chorus, that's just the name.
It's called premier.
It's called a premier ensemble.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say that our scholars are less advanced than the premier ensemble. It's just the premier ensemble of the National Children's Chorus. The scholars is designed to bridge the gap between treble singing and then the collegiate level. There are some high school programs which are very wonderful, and I can think of some right out here in Los Angeles that are some of the best choral programs in the nation. But there are also many high schools that do not have a quality choral program, unfortunately. And for a lot of our members of the NCC, especially boys whose voices have changed, if we did not have this college prep SATB group, well, they would just get dumped off the edge of the cliff they had. And during that time, from 8th grade until college, for some of them, they could potentially lose their... We want to keep their passion going. So that's why we created this. We rehearse at the Manhattan School of Music for the scholars in New York and at UCLA here in Los Angeles.
So, let's get into collaborating with Sharon about this work. What is the process? And how did you choose each other? And how do you go about negotiating all the different steps along the way?
Well, I know Sharon has a very wonderful and beautiful daughter in the NCC, and that's how Sharon was introduced to me through our associate artistic director, Dr. Pamela Blackstone. And Sharon told me about some of her projects, and Dr. Blackstone and a couple members of our commissioning committee sat down one day and we listened to some of the music that Sharon had composed. In possibly considering sending a commission request to her. And the music was absolutely gorgeous. It just melts your heart right from the beginning. And it was a yes with a capital Y as soon as we began the process. So Dr. Blackstone then reached out to Sharon and we began talking about what kind of piece that we would want written and taking the next steps.
Okay. Now, I ask the hard questions. How do you fund a commission, and how do you fund a commission so it's not insulting to either party? I mean, because I really feel like a lot of children's choruses that are, you know, community model choruses struggle to survive, let alone be able to commission something. So is it from tuition, or do you have other outside benefactors that help you with this kind of thing? And how does that work?
Well, the NCC has many different revenue streams, tuition being one of them, but it's one of many. And we also have a special fund that donors can give specifically to. There are some donors who feel very passionately about expanding the art form. Other donors feel passionately about contributing to our scholarship fund, others to our conducting program, others to our composition program. So some donors will just give to the chorus with a without asking for it to be restricted to a certain purpose. Mm-hmm. But for others, commissioning new works is a very important part of our mission, and therefore we do have specific people who give just to that.
What is a what is an average commission run a choir?
That's a good question.
What is an above average commission run a choir? Because I'm assuming Sharon is above average. So you know, I feel like there are some people that'll write for peanuts, and there are some people that really, and they do make a living doing this, and we have to honor that. So what is the range, I guess, without getting into too much detail?
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I was just about to say, just when you're offering the commission, I think it's really important for it to be a very collaborative process. You're right. You don't want to ever make the composer feel undervalued. At the same time, there are budgetary limitations. No matter how much funding that you have, there is a limited a resource. And so I think that you have to be very respectful in the way that you go about communicating around what the budgetary abilities are for any given year, and also with the composer communicating what they would like to be compensated for their work on a particular project. And sometimes they can go back and forth in a few emails, but I think it requires a little bit of flexibility on both ends. And and sometimes if a project can't be funded in a particular year, you have to be respectful of the composer and say, we can't do that right now, but we still want to work with you. How about we do this for next year? So I think there are respectful and diplomatic ways of handling the logistics of it. But I feel it's always a very, it's not a difficult conversation between the composer and at least within our management team. We're very much in support valuing the composers that we work with and creating a really beneficially or a mutually beneficial conditions for both parties.
Sharon, yeah, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, and there was a little bit of back and forth. And I really wanted to work with Luke and the National Children's Chorus because I've heard them. And, you know, I didn't really have an opportunity before to write to a children's choir, and I don't really treat them as children per se, because, you know, the level, at least, and I knew that I'm going to write for the premier ensemble, which is, you know, really basically professional young singers. So and that intrigued me, you know, more than writing for, you know, the basic level or something like that, because I really enjoy a little bit of more complicated harmonies, you know, and a little bit of stretch and in harmonies. So I wanted to work with a group that can do that. So Dr. Pam Blackstone sent me a few PDFs of things that they've done before, and, you know, I listened online a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we came to an agreement to what was right, and I felt very respected. And I felt that they were excited about commissioning me. So as Luke said, it's really it's really beneficial for both sides. You know, every composer, you know, when you do what, as a composer, we want our work to be performed and continued. And many also, the nice thing about working with the NCC is also that there are at least two performances, because many times a piece will be commissioned, maybe an orchestra or a choral work, and there's going to be one performance and that's it, and the piece is dead unless the composer, on top of being a composer, has, you know, the time to promote the music. And I can tell you that it's very challenging even when you have help, because you still have to be extremely assertive in promoting, always promoting, especially for me, because I have my different projects that I'm doing, maybe film or TV or orchestral work or you know, and when you do have a piece after it was premiered, you want to have it continued, like with my cello concerto. So it's wonderful to know that this piece is going to be premiered in Los Angeles and on the East Coast. So more people can see it and hear about it. And hopefully there will be more collaborations, definitely with the NCC and other choirs as well. So you never know how things are going to go. But it's in regards to commissioning, you know, it really varies. And it really varies of where you are in your own career. So if I was just coming out of school and starting out, I'm sure commissioning agreement would be different. But luckily, I'm not there. So it was great. It was a pleasure to do this and get it commissioned.
Great. Luke, the question I have, for you is what do you look for? And what are some things that Choir Nation should look for in helping to give a composer an idea of the kind of thing that you are looking for as your artistic director? I noticed you said that Dr. Blackstone presented some PDFs of some pieces that you guys had already done, so you get an idea maybe of the difficulty level and maybe the tessitura that they're comfortable singing in and that kind of thing. How do you prepare a composer to work with your group?
That's a very good question. I think it's really important to have a very clear concept in mind of what the parameters are for the piece. I have certain ideas about treble singing. For instance, I usually recommend mostly three-part, not too much four-part. I just don't feel that the bass note in a treble chord really comes through as bass. And there are some great, four-part SSAA pieces, but I always feel that it doesn't sound as clean and pretty as the three-part where you sort of implicate or imagine the bass note. You can hear it even if it's not in the chord. And so I feel that the trebles with the SSA texture just sounds beautiful, and with some Debussy. So I have ideas like that. I normally mention that to composers, but I always respect what the composer really wants to do. I don't want to give them too much direction because it's their work. You want them to use their full creativity and to do their thing. At the same time, you do need to provide them with some guidance, such as, we want this piece to be 2.5 to 3 minutes. That's important if you're you have to tell them how long. It's mm-hmm. like, we're thinking a 3-movement cantata, roughly 30 minutes. It's, okay. And also, it's very important to tell them what you have in mind for the scoring. Would you like this to be a cappella? We want this to be a piece for treble chorus plus orchestra and cello soloist and soprano.
That's my
soloist.
Next one. That's the so, next.
Yes. Yes. And so it's important to have those things in mind. And so for this piece, Children of Light, Sharon and I talked about it, and we really felt that the unaccompanied voices of the children would bring the message through even deeper than if there were instrumentation sure. along the piece. In addition to the fact that we also think, with the program that's being done, what are the other pieces on the program where the premiere is taking place? If it were a program that's all a cappella, perhaps then you would want a piece that had a little bit more variety in terms of the texture of the sound. But we have piano and cello already on the program for much of it. We're doing a 5-movement work in 4-part. It's SSAA. And then Sharon's piece will be sung right after that. So we feel it will really pop in terms of the texture. So all of those considerations sure. are just giving the composer basic parameters, logistical things, but really leaving the creativity 100% up to them. I don't like to get too involved with that.
So there's no revision process where we're going to send you what I'm thinking of, and then you say, but I was actually thinking more like this. Or, I mean, has that ever been a thing? Is that a thing?
I personally don't make artistic recommendations to the composer. Mm-hmm. I will make logistical recommendations, such as, if we don't take a breath in all of these, there's no way that these two pages can be sung without a breath. Therefore, we're going to have to do a lot of stagger breathing, and it's going to have to be organized stagger breathing. That's going to take a lot of rehearsal time. There's limited amount of rehearsal time to prepare the work well. We have to be practical in some situations in order to speed up the process and get a refined sound as quickly as possible. So there are those considerations.
How about difficulty level?
I normally let the composer write as difficult music as they want. And we sing a lot of really difficult music. I have to say, this piece that's composed by Sharon, it is very difficult, extremely difficult. If an adult professional chorus would for sure have, they would not be likely able to sight read through the entire thing perfectly the first time. The tonalities are changing. It's moving between keys. There's a lot of contrast in the piece. This is definitely a piece written at the adult professional level. So even adult community choruses, I wouldn't recommend this level of difficulty for the piece. So Sharon has really challenged our singers, but I love that because that's what improves them as musicians. When they have to go through the process of being good enough to sing a piece of music like this well at Lincoln Center and Royce Hall, that's when you're building exceptionally skilled musicians.
So I think this brings me to wanting to ask about sort of the mission and vision part of what you do. And then how Sharon's role is, you know, how she plays into that. But, you know, we just literally had somebody post in our Choir Nation Facebook group that they were, you know, having difficulty with a sort of motivating their choir. People aren't showing up for rehearsal, or they're not showing up for performances, or they're canceling at the last second and saying, I can't make it. And my response tends to be for this type of question, of the what do I do, is, well, you need to talk to the students about what is important to them. How can you make this choir important for them? Because people do things, they find a way to do things that are important for them. And so
that's right.
I want to know how you have made, I hear Lincoln Center, I hear Carnegie, I hear, you know, Walt Disney Concert Hall, and I know you didn't start there. Maybe you did, but I'm sure most people don't start a community ensemble and then say, I'm going to perform at such and such a place. I mean, there's lots of tour companies that will let you do that, I guess. But how did you motivate them initially to say, this is important in my life and I'm going to commit to it?
Yeah, this is definitely not that. We're not a tour company that rents out Carnegie Hall and then charges the singers to perform there. The world-class venues that we use are just an appropriate space for the world-class music the students are performing. And it was an organic process. We did not start at those venues, like you said. We rehearsed and began at St. Paul the Apostle School in Westwood. And most of the performances were at St. Paul's, which is a beautiful space, but not Walt Disney Concert Hall. You know, it was that level yet. And the program did grow organically. As I mentioned, we only started with 16 families. The venues are not the reason the NCC or that music is important in the lives of the students. That's not the draw of why they are in there. If the rehearsal process and the bulk of time that they spent at the NCC were not extremely enjoyable and electrifying to their senses, and if it did not produce joy in their lives, the payoff of just getting to sing in Walt Disney Concert Hall, believe it or not, that's not that important to a child. It's important to us.
Yeah, they don't know.
We know how amazing, what a huge honor it is to perform in venues like that. But for the children, that's not nearly enough. They have to be having an amazing time in every rehearsal. Joy and desire are where we start with everything. We don't allow the students to not want to be there. The desire to be in the chorus is a prerequisite to membership. We have a very rigorous audition process. If we get the sense that any student is not really there, wanting to be there, or their parent is kind of pushing it on them, we don't accept that student. The joy and the desire has to come from the students. And you will be amazed what can be achieved when you have an entire room of students who are dying to sing this music. And that really is the energy at the NCC. Our students leave rehearsal with a cheer. And that's not, I know it sounds kind of corny, but it's true. At the NCC, when we announce that the rehearsal is over, the students are beaming. I mean, literally. And that's too why their parents are so excited and committed. Sharon is a parent of one of our students in the NCC in Los Angeles. And maybe she can speak to that just a little bit.
Please.
You know, what's so amazing about, because, you know, I'm a composer and a musician myself. I have an extremely talented daughter, and it was important to me to not just have her anywhere. You know, it was important to me to have a place where she would grow on every level. The level of discipline in this choir is unbelievable, and I think it's so important for young people to have this kind of discipline. It's not a discipline that is a negative one. It's a very positive discipline, and there are rules, and you have to follow the rules. And if you follow the rules, it means that you really want to be there. You know, if you cannot be late, you know, and it's also the parents' responsibility. And it's pretty expensive, actually, to do that. So, you know, if the child is not really into it, there's no point. You know, I feel that every cent that we give to this choir makes my daughter not only a better singer, but a better human being. She collaborates with others. She loves this. She loves going. And it's not only singing, it's the right posture, it's the right breathing technique, it's everything that I would expect from a very, very high level choir. And she started when she was 5 years old. I mean, and it was already, you know, it was an audition, it was a serious audition. She was expected to behave in a certain way. And, you know, if the kids are not mature enough, then they're not ready to have such a wonderful experience. So I think what Luke has created is really unbelievable. And I'm not surprised at all that they, you know, get to sing in these amazing places, because that's where they belong. And as a parent, I'm just so happy that my daughter, because it's not only about singing. Later on, there's a conducting, and there's composition, and of course there's sight reading and solfège and all that kind of stuff that is so important. And their self-esteem is being built, and they're, you know, they're standing on a stage with such, you know, their uniforms. It's not just like, I wouldn't even call it a community choir. I would call it a very professional children choir, because community choir for me sounds a little bit like you said, oh, you know, I'll skip rehearsal today. I don't feel like
Let me take a second and just break down the things that I'm hearing, though, because I think these are, it's always important for me to try to pull some of the good stuff out of what I hear you talking about, so that Choir Nation has some bullet points to sort of take away from the interviews. Is it really sounds like y'all know your mission. You know, y'all have a vision. You understand the importance of knowing when to say yes and knowing when to say no. You know, and I think it's almost like dating. Like, if you're gonna want to marry a guy or gal that knows what they want. They know their own value. They know their worth to the world. They know that they know when to say no. They know when to say yes. You know, and you want to be with somebody that has that clear of a focus, right? And I think the thing that I'd like to see more in the choral world is, and this is why Fortune 500 companies spend thousands upon thousands of dollars to develop their stupid, you know, 6-word mission statement, right? Because it's so important that people understand what the value is that you bring to the people that you serve, whether it's the community that's the audience, whether it's the children that come to your choir, whether it's the parents that entrust their children with you each week. and that kind of thing. And I think the real answer to these like recruitment issue type questions that the real world in choral music has is, well, figure out who the hell you are, you know, figure out who you are and be okay saying no to the people that you really don't think are really want to be there. And then the other thing that I really heard Luke say is that, you know, the rehearsal process has to be positive and engaging and fun, and people have to people, you know, and Stevie, my assistant, who is an excellent director, she always talks about car talk. Car talk meaning what is the child going to say when they get in the car on the way home? Because that's important. If the child gets in the car and mom says, well, how'd it go? The kid has to go, oh my God, it was the best thing ever. And it's, which mom's saying, it's worth spending $200 a month, you know, to do this because my kid loves it so much. And you also are priced, which I actually love this. I've noticed this in the online community. The more expensive, quote unquote, and I know you've scholarshiped a lot of people, and we talked about that earlier, but the more value you place on the thing that you do, the more people take it seriously. Like, you know, if you have to think, do I really, this check is mildly painful for me to write, but I know that there's value here. It's never a problem to write the check, and that goes with any activity. I mean, look at hockey moms. They're the most vicious, amazing moms in the world because they just spent $2,000 on equipment. They better be passionate about
it. It's like going to the gym. If you pay to go to the gym, you will exercise. You know, if you don't, then you
So I just want to break all those things down and just hopefully Choir Nation understands how very important what they do is, but the importance doesn't get demonstrated through saying, I'm important, come to rehearsal. The important is demonstrated through how you engage with the students and the community and the value that you place on sort of how you do it all. So, I mean, Luke, you're an expert at this, so talk to me.
Well, absolutely. And I think that's really the responsibility of the director. And I always give this advice to directors. As you know, with the NCC, we have about 20 ensembles between our three cities. And so I sit in at least once a year, if not twice a year, on every class of the entire organization nationwide. And the most frequent bit of advice that I give to the conductors, because they're all really great, you know, they all have their master's degree or their doctorate, they're all very well trained. And so their conducting is always spectacular, their German pronunciation amazing, but I always tell them, have fun, like really have fun in the rehearsal. And a lot of them I know outside of the NCC, and they're so hilarious. And I find sometimes within the context of the rehearsal, some of that humor is lost. And I tell them, bring out your humor. You're so funny. Like you have to have a very, very keen sense as a director in the rehearsal. You do have to be serious and make sure that these musical elements get learned and that you're technical and that you're fast and that you get the business done. But as soon as you feel that tension in the room where it's starting to, people are starting to get a little bit, you know, tight with the stress or the pressure, especially children. If they can feel that stress or pressure, you got to cut that and break the air. And you got to do it just like you've been doing a few times in this interview with cracking a joke and saying something funny. That goes a long way. In fact, I was just watching Eric Whitaker work with the children of the NCC this past week. And one of the things he does so well, and with the Master Chorale too, you have to remember that adults are just big kids. We all are in many ways. Right. We all love humor too. And Eric is so good at making the funniest jokes where, you know, it's so serious. This is Eric Whitaker conducting at the Los Angeles, you know, with the Los Angeles Master Chorale at Walt Disney Concert Hall. That's a very serious project for a children's chorus. But he makes so many funny jokes where you're on the floor and then quickly back to measure 42, you know, make sure we crescendo over that bar line or change these notes. Right. So the director, he's very good at that. And that's really the key or the secret about getting a lot done in the rehearsal, but retaining the joy. If you lose the joy in the rehearsal, all is lost. And I suppose you can afford to do that with professional singers, I guess, because they're paid and they're not going to leave. They're going to come to your rehearsals and they're going to sing in your concerts. But I conjecture that they will sing a lot better and that their music would be a lot better if you have engaged them as human beings, if you're funny, if you're connected. And music is supposed to be fun. It's not just about singing these notes correctly. It has to all come from the joy. So never lose sight of that.
Well, that was a really great summary. Thank you. I want to ask Luke one more thing, and then I want to go to Sharon about something special. But Luke, the qualities that you're looking for when you're hiring a conductor, can you just like rattle off a couple? We'll just take a couple seconds and just rattle off a couple qualities that you're looking for.
Well, I think, are you talking specifically for children's chorus?
I'm sorry, maybe let's do two things. The qualities for the conductors of your children's choruses, your chori, okay?
Yeah.
And then the qualities that you find successful children have in this is, so this is for any parent listening. What are the qualities of successful children that you see in your programs?
That we take into the program and the auditions. Mm-hmm. Okay, so for conductors, first of all, it is very important to me that they are trained conductors. I know that there are not many undergraduate conducting programs. Generally, you have to wait until your master's degree in most places to actually start taking conducting lessons and to learn conducting. And the general consensus often is that you don't really need to learn to conduct, you just do it. And I strongly disagree with that. There absolutely is such a thing as excellent conducting technique, clarity with both languages of the timekeeping with the right hand, the interpretation with the left hand, and also in terms of knowing how to bring the ensemble together. So it's very important to me that people have been formally trained in conducting. We don't like to hire people who just conduct. I also like people who generally have played an instrument. It's not required. There are some conductors who are excellent, have an amazing ear, who have never played an instrument, but I do prefer if they have had some instrumental work as well, preferably piano, so they think in terms of the entire orchestration. Mm-hmm. That's helpful. And but then beyond their qualifications on paper, the next thing is when we do the in-person interview, so extremely important that they have the fire in their eyes and that they're engaging. I'm thinking to myself, these children are not going to see their resume. They don't care whom this person has studied with. They don't care if the person has attended Juilliard or any other prestigious school or has whatever their projects have done. The only thing that those children are going to care about is how this conductor engages them, makes them feel, and trains them within the process. So the way that they are in the interview, we also like to see rehearsal footage to make sure that this person knows how to engage beyond in the interview itself, but when they are in front of a group. So those are the qualities generally that we look for. And lastly, the love of music. I've met so many trained musicians that I don't feel love music enough. And if you are going to inspire others to really love music, you have to love it yourself. So we generally have to get the sense these people are not conducting because it's their job, but they want to do this because they love it. That's what our students need. That's the standard they need at the National Children's Chorus, standing in front of them every week. So that's really what we focus on in our interviews. For the children coming into the NCC, you would think that our standard is, you know, the student has to have the spectacular soloistic voice, and that's not the case, because when a child is only 7 or 8, you can't expect them to have had a ton of training. Once in a while, you get a student who has had a very good teacher, and they're 12 years old, and their voice is absolutely stunning. Like, you can imagine them already singing solo, you know, at the Met, or singing a solo with Eliop or something like that. But I would say that's 1 in 1,000 of all of our applicants. And you have to remember, only children who are talented and driven will even apply to our program. So of all those musically talented and driven children, only 1 out of 1,000 is at the highest level. So there's no way that we can judge our auditions based on that. What I like to see in the audition is the strong desire in their eyes, the desire to learn, and the love of music. And then, of course, we do their tests in terms of their ability to match pitch, their music reading ability. Also, if they're a senior division applicant, I like to hear them sing a song so that we can see their expression. And so that's more about placement, though. That's why we have 8 levels. Mm-hmm. We can place someone in the ensemble based on where their level of musical expertise is. But I've seen more often than not, the student that has a strong desire to learn will quickly outpace any student who originally came to us with a greater level of skill but with less desire. Those are the things that are important to us at the audition.
Great.
And having done literally thousands of auditions with Dr. Blackstone over the last 10 years, it's very obvious to us right away with each student that we audition.
And Sharon, when you write the check each month, what are the qualities that you look for in the people that are working with your daughter?
I want my daughter, she's only 6 and a half. As you say, car talk, I want to ask her, how was rehearsal? And I want to hear, it was fun. And then, what did you sing today? And then she starts singing the music that they've learned. And, you know, it just all, I mean, she was even talking about, you know, the shoes that she's going to wear for the performance because she was so excited about the performance. And when can we do it again? And it just, you know, I want to have, as a professional musician, I can see exactly if it's good or not good. And from the first moment that she got in the first lesson, they were still out in the lobby, and I can't remember, there was one of the teachers who was talking to the small kids, 5 years old, you know, with a little, I don't know, what it, like a dog doll or something mm-hmm. like that. And they were, you know, having so much fun. So if I'm writing a check, I want my daughter to have A, fun, B, learn singing techniques, you know, see, have the ability and the opportunity to actually perform, you know, because if it's once a year, it's not enough. If you have, oh, let's do a recital at the end of the, no, this is so organized. And it's every time we go there, everything is just like a clock, you know, and it's amazing to see the people who are, when the kids come in, they have to sign in. And like it's like Rudolph, it's just amazing. Hi, Eden. He knows everybody already. Oh, you're checked in. I just checked you in. You know, I mean, there's also a feeling of community and kind of a family. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody kind of starting to know everybody. It's just really a pleasure. But also the extreme level of musicality is extremely important to me, mm-hmm. of course. And that's what I find at the NCC. And there was no doubt in our mind that we're going to continue unless, you know, our daughter didn't want to. But, of course, mm-hmm. she really wants to.
Great.
So I highly recommend the NCC to every parent who's listening right now because they will get more than their money worth.
And I think to Choir Nation, those of you who are listening out there in the school community as well, I want you to take what Sharon just said very seriously, because she just gave you all of the answers. Like, if you want your program to be great and you want, you know, important stakeholders, aka parents, to support what you're doing and to make it important, you know, then take those answers that Sharon just gave you and write them down like in a bullet form and stick them on your in front of your desk. You know, are they having fun? Are you organized? You know, are people getting the sense that you have it together? You know, are there high quality musical opportunities and all these different things? And, you know, also, you know, consider the things that Luke mentioned as well. Those qualities, and then those qualities for the director, and those qualities for the students. You know, the ones that are most invested in your program are those ones that come willing to learn and have an open mind and are, you know, positive, and they're willing to, and you see the fire in their eyes, as Luke said. You know, so you can really use these lists that we just spoke about as ways to gauge how you are doing as a director, and what kind of students you're investing your time with, and things like that. It helps you just become more, you gain more of an identity as a director, and your program begins to really build their mission and their values and things through through in their identity through this kind of stuff. So
if I may add one more thing that I like about the NCC that I think is important to parents, I don't feel that like even the 5 years old are being treated as kids, like, you know, they're just kids, you know, or, you know, we'll just give them. But no, it's even in the first levels, they're just they're being treated with respect. And I think that when you treat someone with respect, it doesn't matter if he or she are 5 or 50, you're going to gain their respect back. So whatever you give is what you're going to get. And the NCC gives this respect to the kids, and the kids give the respect back. So when they are there, they respect the director or the conductor, they respect the music. There's mutual respect that I think is very, very beautiful.
So the energy just bounces right back. Well, you know, we are coming up on close to an hour here, so I want to make sure I'm respectful of Choir Nation's time. I really feel like we pulled a lot of really interesting stuff out of today's interview, and hopefully you gained a great perspective on the NCC and what the kind of work they're doing, and hopefully you can be inspired by that. Can you leave quickly, Luke, the details for this weekend, if you happen to be in LA or New York, where we can find that, and then leave me some information for Choir Nation on where they can learn about the NCC.
Absolutely. We have a few performances coming up. So if you're in Los Angeles, we have two performances. We have one on Friday evening at 7:30 p.m. at UCLA's Royce Hall. It's entitled Winter Dream, and that's where we're performing the world premiere of Sharon's piece, Children of Light. And then the very next day, on Saturday, we are performing at Walt Disney Concert Hall with the Los Angeles Master Chorale. It's the same Festival of Carols, which is also being conducted by Eric Whitaker. The Saturday after that, we're performing at New York's Lincoln Center, the same program, Winter Dream, where we will then present the East Coast premiere of Sharon's piece. And then we have two performances called the Fall Showcase, one in Washington, D.C. on Sunday, December 17th, and in New York on that Friday, December 15th. So those are all listed on our website. If you visit us at www.nationalchildrenschorus.com, all of our events are listed there. And we would love to, we would love to have any guests from your listener base.
Great.
As well.
Awesome. And Sharon, where can we find information about you? I'm sorry, Luke, did you have something you wanted to finish?
Yes. In fact, if you have any listeners in Los Angeles, if they can contact you, and if you or if there's some way that they can go through that they're listeners of Choir Nation, we'd be willing to give them a complimentary ticket to the performance.
Okay.
So please let me know. And
are you in the Facebook group yet, Luke?
I'm going to join tonight.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then we can tag you, Luke, in a post if anybody is interested in coming and checking out the performance. Sharon, where will we find information about what you're up to?
Well, I'm redoing my website as of today, and I'll have a new one on because my website right now is geared more towards film music. So I'm creating a new one, which will have everything. And that's going to probably be starting January 1st, SharonFarber.com.
Okay.
So everybody is welcome to check it out, and I can be contacted directly over there, not through my agent. I can just there's a direct contact. And the last thing I want to say is that Luke mentioned the piece is hard. It is, but it's also very, very melodic, I would say, because I really believe that music is so important, and it can affect the audience on and the singers on a very deep level. So I believe in connecting the hearts of the composer and the singers with the audience. And I would love to, hopefully we will have a recording at one point that we can maybe use, and at least bits of it we can maybe put online. That would be wonderful. But I'm very excited about Friday, and I hope a lot of people will come. And if you're in LA, join us. You won't regret it.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you both for being my guests today on the Choir Ninja podcast. And you've certainly helped our audience members in Choir Nation step up to their own podium with purpose today. So thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan. Bye-bye.
Choir Ninja Show. Bung, bung.